level seems to be low, so I have to increase my diction. So if it sounds like I'm broadcasting, I am. When one can see the realm of the one Lord, and the ancient Sanskrit name for that figure was Indra. In Greece, that figure was Zeus. We've been blitzed so much by Western religious tradition that we no longer can even understand that Zeus was a one-lorded realm. But that was true. Indra, anyway, in India. In Buddhism, it's called the Hiranyagarbha. That's in the Mahayana, it's called that. When one can see the realm of the one Lord, there's an invitation to making an offering. Simultaneously with seeing the one Lord realm comes the invitation for you to make an offering. They occur together. So the essential quality of the one Lord is for you to participate in the joy that you're seeing of him is the invitation for you to do something about it. This is the original trigger that precipitates man out of nature, because the making of offerings is ritual. What offering could one offer? Doing exactly what one is doing. The highest ritual is to see things just as they are. One wishes to make a correct offering to the Lord. That's what one does. One does exactly what one is doing. That's the best offering. That's the fruit of it all. It's not the fruit of the, it's the true fruit of the vine, as Jesus said. That's the true fruit of the vine. When you offer exactly what you're doing in its thusness, the Lord accepts that. Yes, of course, why not? That's it. The Mundaka Upanishad says, I'll read it to you in the translation so you can get this. It's profound. Whosoever performs works, makes offerings, when these tongues are shining, and at the proper time, these offerings in the form of the rays of the sun lead him to that world where the one Lord of the gods abides. The radiant offerings invite him with the words, come, come, and carry the sacrificer by the rays of the sun, honoring him, saluting him with pleasing words. This is your holy world of Brahma won through good deeds. Man returns the world and its reality back to the maker. If man doesn't do this, it isn't done. If man doesn't perform the U-turn, it doesn't happen. So man has a responsibility. There are no gods that can do this. There are no angels that can do this. There are no demons, certainly. And it isn't going to happen just by chance. If we don't do it, it doesn't happen. If we never do it, it never happened. It means that there's no phenomenal thusness in the universe. Illusion without end. It stops being illusion at the point where man turns it around and makes it real. Man is the maker of the real. The Bhagavad Gita says the mind is the slayer of the real. By just thinking it and think that that's done it, kills. That's the letter of the law that kills. You have to actually do it in the doing of it. That is life. So the Mundaka Upanishad has this kind of thing. Notice how the words in translation now fan out and produce a kind of a sense of gracefulness and attentiveness, and finally we'll come to the key idea, the concept of sacrifice. The Sanskrit word for this would be tapas. Tapas. It reads like this: abiding in the midst of ignorance, wise in their own esteem, thinking themselves to be learned, fools afflicted with troubles go about like blind men, led by one who is himself blind. These are the people that give out the diagrams and the theories and the theologies and the whole entourage of beautiful, clever ways of tying up nothing. And all that one can do is stuff one's existential hands into one's life pockets and amble out and go somewhere else. The immature, living manfoldly in ignorance, they're exfoliated and they're so proud of themselves and they're just stupid. I wish I could imitate the way Krishnamurti, towards the end of his life, was able to say it. I am appalled at those from my own country who are collecting not only shekels, but disciples. Author. The immature, living manfoldly in ignorance, think, we have accomplished our aim. Since those who perform rituals do not understand the truth because of attachment, therefore they sink down, wretched, when their worlds, in other words, the fruits of their merits, are exhausted. These deluded men, regarding sacrifices and works of merit as most important, do not know any other good. Having enjoyed in the high place of heaven, won by good deeds, they enter again this world or a still lower one. But those who practice austerity, tapas, and faith in the forest, a beautiful image, those who practice faith in the forest, the tranquil knowers who live the life of the mendicant, depart, freed from sin through the door of the sun to where dwells the immortal, imperishable person. The sun itself becomes a threshold. One goes back through that. Or in Plotinus, for those who are following that, one goes to the great intelligence of the star god who opens himself up, Ra himself, and you can pass through into life immortal. What's on the other side of the stars? The inside of the stars. What's beyond the innermost inside of the star? That place where this world is, it's like a phantom dandelion. Having scrutinized the worlds, won by works, let a Brahmana arrive at non-attachment. The world that is not made is not won by what is done. For the sake of this knowledge, let him only approach with sacrificial fuel in hand, a teacher who is learned in the scriptures, established in Brahma. Unto him who is approached in due form, whose mind is tranquil and who has attained peace, let the knowing teacher teach in its very truth that knowledge about Brahman by which one knows the imperishable person, in Sanskrit, Ishvara, the imperishable person, the true. Now, Now, this is the first of the three sections of the mundaka. I won't take the other two, but you can see that when one goes back to protean, ancient wisdom traditions, how you can unfold it even now, we're at least almost 27 centuries away from when the mundaka would have been contemporaneous. It can still be unfolded exactly in its pristine thusness in ways in which we can understand and comport to. What does that mean? There's a meaning here. It means we're still in the same history. Do you understand? We're in the same history. We're in the same flow. It means that the Mundaka Upanishad and its culture are not outside of the history that we're still in. If it belonged to a different cycle, a different history, we would not be able to make it contemporaneous and intelligible in our terms. So that we're still within a historical flow which was working even 2,700 years ago. Question: how far back does our historical continuity go? Answer: about 5,000 years. That when you go back beyond 3,000 BC, you enter into a different history. It's no longer intelligible in terms that we could unfold contemporaneously. For instance, when an archaeological array is set up, say of some site like Kotolhuyuk, which is from roughly 6,500 BC or about 8,500 years from us, no one knows what that means. We have the whole plan of the community, of this city, of the ritual implements, the architecture, everything. No one knows. No one is sure what it means. It's outside of our history. It belongs to a different ecological cycle, which somehow was brought to fruition and completed. And our history is starting again. That somewhere around 3000 BC started again. That there's a watershed. What happened around 3000 BC? Around 3000 BC is the first time that history began to occur as a transformational medium. There was no history, there was no historical problem before that time. So that the transformational medium, the ultimate transformational medium before 3000 BC was magic. But for the last 5,000 years, magic as a transformation medium has been superseded by history. And we can, if we want to, if we can project ourselves back into an ancient, an archaic, a primordial level, we can still put ourselves into an empathy where we can begin to understand magic. Not just magic in the grimoires and all that. That's a child's play. I'm talking about reality making. But magic is not enough. Because the problem is not there. That was handled well. Because what comes out of magia is the human personality in its thusness. And that does exist, that does occur. It was very difficult to find persons 5,000 years ago. There are almost no persons. And yet the first time when there are persons, even at the beginning of our historical epoch, the persons are very definite. The classic example, which I always will hold up, and I'll try and, after the lecture, dig it out for you, the portrait of Sargon of Akkad 4,700 years ago. I mean, you can just see. You can see the personality. I mean, Sargon is really somebody. And you can still see in the expression on the face, in the Semitic features, you can see the man. And 4,700 years has made no difference whatsoever in terms of human personality. But what was a beginning problem there is now a very complicated labyrinthian problem for us. What is that problem? Historical consciousness, the flow of thought manifesting itself. Our problem is exactly in the thought function. We're drowning in a runaway misfunctioning of our minds. Now, if you're going to put a label on that, a legal label, that's called insanity. The problem of man now is literally insanity, in the sense that he drowns in the proliferation of his thoughts, which have no way of patterning themselves. And that is a very serious problem. That is the problem. That's the sickness unto death, as Kierkegaard said. To drown in your own mind is very, very, very tragic, very characteristic kind of death, characteristic of our time. People are drowning in their own minds by the hundreds of millions. And so the Buddha says you have to cross to the other shore. You need a raft. The raft is the Dharma to cross to the other shore. The value in the raft is just to cross to the other shore. The other shore of what? The other shore of the mind. Don't drown in that ocean. Don't get lost in that ocean. Don't make a virtue out of being free and just fooling around in that ocean. That's not it at all. It's to get to the other shore. What's the other shore? The other shore is the definiteness of the spirit. The science of knowing. Coming to the cosmos. Instead of the uncertainty principle, the cosmic principle. Who can do that? Who can cross? The vehicle that can cross is the selfless person. The flame in the fire, the selflessness in the person can cross. That's Ishvara. That's the Lord. And the realm of the one Lord is that other shore. That's as much as I can say. Beyond that, I don't know anything. You have to find some other teacher. Let's pause for a few minutes. And